This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show is jam-packed with films. We've got six of them to cover. It's going to be The Boss, Hardcore Henry, Demolition, and Midnight Special, which are all new, plus One More Time, which is a very small release, still new, and Remember, which has been out for a couple of weeks, but is trickling around through this great country of ours. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, some box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And you can always find me lurking about on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Thank you, Ron Burgundy. Let's jump right into the news with some more Warner Brothers stuff and still some fallout from Batman versus Superman. The first thing we've heard is that Warner Brothers is now planning on releasing fewer homegrown smaller movies in lieu of building big franchises. And that makes sense because that's essentially what Disney's doing. Now, Disney will still do movies. They still do the Touchstone movies that are going to make big money, like Million Dollar Arm and 100 Foot Journey and stuff like that. But Disney's all about the brands of Pixar, Marvel, Lucasfilm. I mean, they've got all these brands now that, and even in their classic remake brand, you've got Pete's Dragon, you have Cinderella that came out, you had Maleficent. They're building on established brands, and those are the things that make the most money. And Warner Brothers, because they had a really rough couple months, and especially last year, with movies like Jupiter Ascending and Pan that were big, expensive movies that did not do well. They are now trying to streamline, and they're streamlining it into the DC universe, and they're trying to bring back Harry Potter. They're bringing in all the Lego movies because now they've got Lego Batman coming out. They're probably going to do fewer movies like Hot Pursuit or Tammy or In the Heart of the Sea, which was a much more expensive movie, and it was kind of a flop. Same thing with Point Break. Point Break was meant to be this remake, but it really wasn't a franchise starter. They're going to their tried and true stuff. And while that is distressing to some people out there, that's where the money is. These big franchises, it's a craps table. You got to gamble big. And I'm not even just assigning whether that's good or bad. I'm just saying that that's what's going to happen. Now, as that dovetails into some Warner Brothers news for the comic books, the Wonder Woman movie has been moved up a few weeks into early June, like June 2nd. It was originally going to come out like the 23rd. But they've moved it up, and I don't know if that's good or bad. I think they're getting out of the way for the 4th of July movies because they want to have a couple weeks where they could be big in the box office instead of getting clobbered by, like, Transformers 5. I don't know. I mean, Gal Gadot is still untested. Everyone will say, well, she was the most buzzworthy part of Batman versus Superman. Yeah, but her character was shrouded in mystery, and she amounted to nothing much more than a cameo. I mean, can she act? I don't think that's been established yet. It might be next week when Criminal comes out, because she supposedly has a meaty part in that. Is the script any good? Is the story good? Is this more than just the neo-feminist online beating the politically correct drum for a female superhero out of hope? Who knows? We'll see you next summer when Wonder Woman comes out one way or the other. The other bit of news is there's two things that went on with Suicide Squad. First of all, it's getting reshoots, allegedly to put more humor into the movie, which I called a while ago. Whether or not it's in response to people saying that Batman versus Superman is too dark, I've been saying for months that David Ayers has no sense of humor, and he is not a whimsical director, and his stuff is grim and heavy, and that could be damaging to Suicide Squad. If it's such a heavy movie, no one's going to want to... It's not going to be huge. Whereas, like, R-rated Deadpool was hilarious and lighthearted at times, goofy and silly. That's, I think, what they want. I think this is probably more of a response to Deadpool than it is a response to Batman versus Superman. And movies get reshoots all the time. So it could also just be that the test audience were saying, it's a little heavy. Another piece of Suicide Squad news is Suicide Squad 2 has been set up with a 2017 shooting date. So they're already planning a sequel, which is how they're building their franchises. Another piece of news that came out, and this sort of dovetails into the trailer park, and I'll talk about that here in a second. But specifically, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, the trailer for that dropped on Thursday morning on Good Morning America. And with any sort of big anticipated film, it lit the internet on fire, and everybody was talking about it. And I'll play a bit of it in a little bit, and I'll talk to you about my reactions to the trailer. But the one thing I'm seeing happen is there's this narrative going on in the internet where all the movie news really happens. No one reads The Hollywood Reporter in print anymore. No one reads people probably have a subscription to Entertainment Weekly, but it is not where the breaking news is happening, not in a publication that takes a week to produce. There's this bit of a news story going around about how people were reacting negatively to the fact that then Rogue One, there's a female lead and the female characters, it's all around. It's a Felicity Jones. And a couple things hit me first off on that is I'm like, we knew that this was happening. We knew she was the star of it. She was the name associated with this movie for years. It should not be a surprise that, oh my gosh, she's the lead character. I mean, maybe people got a little bit surprised when Rey had such a meaty part in Star Wars The Force Awakens. But Rogue One is about her, and it was always Felicity Jones cast, and she's leading this charge. I think what's actually happening is you're seeing people claiming there's a big hubbub about there being a female protagonist. I have yet to see any sort of original source for this, but I've like seen the same tweet that's been referred to. Look, you can search Twitter for any caustic opinion, no matter how far in the minority it is. And then you can use it as a straw man argument to represent far more people than it does, only to swoop in and write a holier than thou piece that pushes your own agenda instead of actually reporting the news. The news is not people are bothered by there being a female lead. That is not the news. That is a manufactured news story by a overly progressive, poorly journalistic integrityed internet. And people are giving it credibility. And this is what happens when you have too many news sources, not enough actual news, and an entire financial infrastructure built on getting as many clicks as possible. And we're seeing the chickens come to roost on that. The bottom line is, I don't think there's anybody complaining that there's a female protagonist in Rogue One. I think there might be one or two people, but it's like Mad Max last year when some idiot posted a blog about how it was an overly feminist, obnoxious movie, and suddenly that became a rallying cry of, you shut up, all you sexist men out there. There's one guy who wrote about it, and then suddenly it's projected onto everybody. That's the biggest problem that people have with Twitter and social media is they take a tiny little microcosm. Even if there's like 100 or 200 tweets about something, there are billions of people on Twitter. That hardly constitutes even a teeny minority opinion. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Well, we're already talking about it. It's Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Trailer dropped this week. Let's go ahead and play it, and here's my reaction to it. It opens on December 16th.
Forgery of imperial documents, possession of stolen property, aggravated assault, resisting arrest.
On your own from the age of 15, reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
This is a rebellion, isn't it? I rebel.
A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know what it is and how to destroy it.
Now, there's a couple things that look great about this movie. The design looks really cool. I mean, they've got Imperial walkers in it. They've got classic stormtroopers, the Death Star. One thing that's noticeably absent in this is Darth Vader. And I am so worried that Gareth Edwards, who made an entire Godzilla movie with like maybe 5 minutes of screen time devoted to the title character, I'm a little worried that Darth Vader is going to be like that. That he will show up and start speaking and the action will go somewhere else. Because that is how Gareth Edwards directs. And I'm a little nervous about that. I hope that all of the action is not in that trailer. There's also some weird things about it. There's like this Asian warrior. I think it's Donnie Yen, who's I think from Hong Kong. But he's like got a staff, so he's doing like martial arts type stuff. And I'm like, isn't that a little 80s racist to have the one guy who comes out with like martial arts stuff be an Asian dude? Still, it looks cool. I hope it's not overly grim. We'll see. I'm still excited to see it. It's a Star Wars movie. That's it for the trailer park. I only had one to talk about. I'm going to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to talk about The Boss and Demolition. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, rolling through the movie reviews. Let's kick things off with The Boss. Melissa McCarthy plays a foul-mouthed, wealthy businesswoman. You know what? Hold on a second. I would love it if I could introduce a movie that Melissa McCarthy's in that does not have to describe her as foul-mouthed. Look, I have nothing wrong with swearing, and I have nothing wrong with crass humor, but it's getting a little tired. It's the same freaking character every time. Melissa McCarthy plays a foul-mouthed, wealthy businesswoman who goes to jail for insider trading, then tries to get back into business while selling Girl Scout-ish cookie brownies.
My name is Michelle Darnell, and I am the wealthiest woman in America.
You're under arrest for insider trading.
Michelle, don't struggle.
You're bankrupt. All your accounts have been frozen.
Get me a new lawyer.
You don't have any money, you stupid ginger.
Mom, if she doesn't have anywhere to go, she should stay here.
What is all this?
This is my way back. We are going to start a brownie empire
and teach these girls real business skills.
I have been kind of critical of Melissa McCarthy in the past quite a bit. And mainly because this obnoxious foul-mouthed persona is not, she's so much better than that. And I actually think we saw a little bit of that with Spy. Spy, she didn't play that obnoxious character. She wasn't the character from The Heat, which was essentially the character from Bridesmaids. And like, Identity Thief I thought was cute, and I'm more or less because of the interaction with Jason Bateman, but she's so much more of an actor. She can do so much more. Yet she is happy to kind of just fall into this shtick. She is becoming the female equivalent of Adam Sandler, who can do really good stuff and can be actually very subversive and different and cool. But he was doing Grown Ups and Jack and Jill and That's My Boy and a lot of this other garbage that kind of ruined his name. And Melissa McCarthy's only going to do well as long as her movies do well. And then suddenly she's going to be just, she's typecasting herself is what's happening. I'd like to see her do more stuff like in that movie St. Vincent with Bill Murray. But enough about just Melissa McCarthy in general. The Boss is a movie I kind of wanted to like. Mainly because I like her as a comedian. I just want to see her do something more. This is directed by Ben Falcone, who is her husband in real life. The last movie they did together was Tammy, which came out about 2 years ago on the 4th of July. And it was one of the worst movies of the year. So this is better than Tammy. So you can rest assured that this is a better film than the movie Tammy. With that said, it's a complete nonsense movie. And look, I know that movies are movies, and they're not supposed to really exist in reality. But it's sort of like when I watch a court show. Part of the thing you want to have in a court show is you want to at least have it believable to the mainstream. But I've seen TV shows and movies where the stuff happening in court is ridiculous even for somebody who doesn't spend any time in court to say, well, there's no way they could do that. I mean, I'm watching this movie and there are just so many pitfalls. Well, there's no way that this person would go into business with her. There's no way that they could get these made before they file any sort of paper. There's no way they could actually do this. There's no way they could get around the permits for the health code. I mean, there's just so much stuff that I'm practicality wise. I mean, you would have to really just kind of consistently take a dead trout and smack yourself in the face like every 30 seconds during this movie to pretend to buy what's actually going on in it. Now, with that said, she's got some funny moments, and Peter Dinklage is in it, and he's kind of funny. He sort of weirdly channels Ben Stiller at times. But I love Peter Dinklage, and I like to see him getting cool roles. and this is kind of an interesting role for him. I wouldn't know if I'd call it cool. Kristen Bell's in this, and I've always had a real thing for Kristen Bell, and she's cute, and she's game to do some pretty silly comedy, but she's never been somebody who can anchor a movie. She's easily playing second fiddle to Melissa McCarthy here. But the problem is that the premise of, like, a scene-by-scene premise is so unbelievable and ludicrous and silly that I just can't even take that seriously. I find myself constantly throwing up mental roadblocks and saying, how did this happen? Or did they not sign paperwork to go into business? Who signed the lease to this building? I mean, things happen in no time. I mean, they're like, okay, we're going to go into business. We're going to build this empire. And then, oh, wait, yeah. It happened last weekend. I mean, the sequence of events are so discombobulated that it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Sadly, I'm going to have to say the boss kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Demolition. Jake Gyllenhaal plays a rich man whose wife is killed in a car crash, and he suffers an emotional breakdown trying to work through his grief.
Julia was a good person.
She worked with special needs children.
She snorted when she laughed. Other than that, I don't think I knew who she really was.
Now that she's gone, I don't even feel sad or pain.
Where exactly are you feeling now?
Sort of in this whole area.
Repairing the human heart is like repairing an automobile. You have to take everything apart. Just examine everything. Then you can put it all back together.
This is one of those movies that had no hype. There's really no buzz surrounding it. So, like, even The Boss, I know I saw the trailers for it, and I was aware of what that was about. Demolition, all I knew is Jake Gyllenhaal was in it. So I went to this movie completely not knowing what it would be. It could be a science fiction film. It could have been a weepy kitchen sink drama. I didn't know. And sometimes that's great. Sometimes I'm pleasantly surprised and enjoy the heck out of a movie, especially when I don't know what I'm getting into. This one wasn't it. I don't think any sort of preparation would have had me like this movie. Part of the problem is it's such an obvious metaphor that they hammer into your face through the whole movie. He is having an emotional break, and he's not processing his guilt. And there's literally a scene, it's in the trailer, I played it, where Chris Cooper, who plays his father-in-law, basically says, to deal with grief, you have to tear everything down and build it back up. And he takes that metaphor literally, and he's like tearing apart the refrigerator, and he's tearing apart his kitchen, and he's tearing apart his computer, and he's tearing apart the bathroom stall at work. It so literalizes that metaphor that it gets almost annoying because it seems insulting. To sit there and finally say, okay, it's called Demolition. He has this whole thing where you have to break it down. And then he goes and he breaks everything down. He's trying to work through his gut. Oh, do you really have to spell that out for me? In that way, it is an insulting type movie because it takes for granted that you don't get it. The other problem I had with this movie is while the performances are really good, I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal's good. Naomi Watts does a fine job. And there's a kid in it who plays her son that does a pretty good job acting. The problem with this movie, though, is I don't like the characters. And I have to find something I like about the characters, even if they're awful people. Like Boogie Nights. Boogie Nights is a great example of a movie where the people are kind of horrible people. They're sleazy. They're drug addicts. They're weirdly crime-riddled. But there's a lovability about them. This movie, I didn't find any sort of connection to any of the characters. And I have a feeling that if the movie took place before she got killed, I still wouldn't have liked any of the characters. They just seemed like vapid, shallow people who had only worried about money. And even their relationship, they have this whole thing where it's always, isn't it terrible, she's gone, but you never really get to know her as a character because he's essentially, oh, I don't know who she was. But yet they loved each other, but did they? And I mean, it's just kind of unappealing to me. And that's why I didn't like the movie. I mean, I'm sure if you like that sort of thing, you want to see somebody working through their groups, literally breaking things down and trying to build everything back up again. Yeah, you might enjoy it, but not me. I thought it kind of sucked.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Hardcore Henry and Midnight Special. There
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
At the Movies with Kevin Carr, continuing with the movie reviews. We are two down, four to go. Let's talk now about Hardcore Henry. A man is given bionic improvements to his body, and he uses his new powers to save the woman he loves from a terrorist.
I love you, Henry.
Henry, they want your technology.
How do I like the new you?
Henry, fight back! You're capable of more than you think.
It's all right. I'm here to help you. Okay, well, the good news is that you're going to live a while. The bad news is there's an army standing between you and your wife. So let's go get her.
It's hard to demonstrate exactly the catch to this movie without actually seeing it, which makes it extremely difficult on the radio since we are in audio medium here. But the big catch to this movie is it is shot completely with a GoPro camera strapped to a stunt person's head. So it's essentially a first-person movie, and in a way looks a lot like a first-person shooting game. There are a whole series of these games from the position of the player going all the way back to, like, Doom. And that's what this movie achieves. Now, we've all seen GoPro videos on the internet and people in stunt ridings and skateboarding and all that hipster thrill seeker stuff. But this is actually applied to a movie. Now, let me address that before I even talk about the movie itself, because I think they're two separate issues here. Like found footage, this is a neat idea. I just hope no matter how well or poorly this movie does, we don't get 15 movies a year based on this shooting style, because it's going to get old fast. Just as the Blair Witch Project was a really interesting way to do a found footage movie, or Paranormal Activity was a really interesting way to present a horror movie, or Cloverfield was a really interesting way to present a monster movie, that we don't suddenly get oodles of imitations and similar themes. I do not want to see all of my movies shot with a GoPro camera, and there's a big reason why. I have to admit that maybe about 30 minutes, 35 minutes into this movie, I felt like I was going to throw up. That has only happened twice in my life, seeing a movie. Not being sick or something. The first time that ever happened was when I did see the Blair Witch Project. I was sitting pretty close to the screen, and I had eaten a bunch of popcorn in the beginning, first half of the movie. And that sort of video look that gets emulated onto a large screen, especially in the woods, really made me nauseous. I mean, incredibly nauseous. At one point, I stood up, I had to walk to the wing of the theater, and I had to sort of stare at the ground and watch out of my peripheral vision the rest of the movie, because every time I looked at the screen, I felt like I was going to puke. Now, I know somebody actually once, during United 93, when they did the screening here in Columbus, they had the main rep. She was there. She left the theater and puked in the trash can. So this is not the first time people have gotten motion sickness from a movie. I figured when I first saw the trailers for Hardcore Henry that this would be a possibly vomit-inducing movie. Not for the quality of the film, but just for the motion sickness angle of it. The only other movie that has done that to me was Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones, which was like 5 or something like that. And that was just so much herky-jerky. And I'd gotten a drink while I was at the theater, and I sat close to the screen again. I had to get up and sit way in the back. But my nausea is not a reflection of the quality of the film. It is a reflection on the shooting style that the director and filmmakers chose for this. With that said, if you have taken your Dramamine and you can handle this very frenetic, very fish-eyed looking movie, you might really enjoy the heck out of Hardcore Henry. I have to say, take the momentary feeling of nausea out of it. I thought it was a cool movie. It's ridiculously over the top. It is insanely over the top. It would make a movie like Shoot 'Em Up crossed with Crank and make that look like My Dinner with Andre. It is such a frenetic, crazy movie and almost nonstop action. There are a couple slower moments, thank God, because that would have sent me running out of the theater to a trash can. But overall, it's a completely bonkers, insane, horribly violent. I mean, like, intensely violent. Like, violent beyond what I was expecting. And I've seen some violent movies in my time. It is hilariously violent as well. I mean, just to the point, there's so much gunplay, so many people getting shot, people's heads exploding, and body parts being lopped off with various instruments, both real and ridiculous. It's a fun movie. I had a blast watching Hardcore Henry. It's raucous. It's silly. It has one moment that gets a little bit weird in a gamer sort of way. If you remember the film Gamer with Michael C. Hall and Gerard Butler, one of my biggest complaints about that movie shows up a bit in this film. But overall, it was a fun movie. And it's like 90 minutes, so you're in and you're out. And even if you throw up, you know, you're going to maybe choke it back for the next 35 minutes and make it to the end of the film. So I'm going to have to say, Hardcore Henry, I enjoyed the heck out of it. It rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Midnight Special. A man and his friend kidnap his son from a cult while the government tracks them because of a bizarre special communications ability the boy has.
Police issued an Amber Alert for an 8-year-old boy. He was abducted from his home near El Dorado, Texas.
It's time. You ready?
Yeah.
What do you know about Altenmeyer?
I wouldn't know where to start. He would have fits.
Things would break. It was like a feeling.
Kind of feeling. We need to know where he is. You'll have no clue what you're dealing with, do you?
This one technically opened a week or two ago in New York and LA, and it's expanding nationwide. This is getting a lot of buzz, mainly because it's directed and written by Jeff Nichols. And if you don't know who that is, he did a movie called Take Shelter, oh gosh, like 4 or 5 years ago with Michael Shannon. It's one of the movies that helped put him on the map before he got cast as General Zod in Man of Steel. It was Michael Shannon and Jessica Chastain, and they were a family where he was building a fort, or basically, battening down the hatches for a coming storm that he thought was going to be apocalyptic. Jeff Nichols also directed Mud, which has less of a fantastic element and is a little more down to earth. And I thought Mud was a very good movie. Midnight Special reminds me a lot of Take Shelter in the sense that it has that fantastical element to it. There is something otherworldly about it. I mean, this kid, his eyes glow and he disrupts electronic communication and can receive and send out signals. So there's something quite bizarre going on beyond just, you know, a kid that acts a little weird. But typical of Jeff Nichols, as you saw in Take Shelter, it's not about the fantastic part. It's about the people reacting to it. It's the human realities that are surrounded by this fantastical MacGuffin. And I know a lot of people like that because it gets to the nitty-gritty of human relationships. It's got a lot of interpersonal interactions. It's got Michael Shannon dealing with being an estranged father and working with his friend, who's played by Joel Edgerton, and also dealing with his baby mama, played by Kirsten Dunst. Take the glowy-eyed, weird kid out of it, and it becomes kind of this heartfelt kidnapping drama, but not in a kidnapping in a bad way. It's him trying to save his son, but the fantastical element kind of keeps the story fresh. I'm not a huge fan of that because I like a little more explanation. I like a little more meat to my fantastic elements. I mean, you can't just sit there and say, well, there's something we can't explain, and we're not going to explain it, but it's sort of sitting here in the background. I like to understand how that fits better, and this movie leaves a lot of that to the interpretation of the viewer. Now, there's a certain degree of religious symbolism going on in this movie, but it's a character drama wrapped around a completely bizarre MacGuffin. And if you like that sort of thing, you're going to love it. I just was turned off by how much character drama I had to sit through and not really get any meat of something otherworldly. Even with that said, I'm going to say Midnight Special kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I've got two reviews of Remember and One More Time, and then the box office and, of course, the Home Cinema Roundup.
Let the Midnight Special shine a light on me.
Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's finish up the movie reviews here. Let's start off with Remember. An Auschwitz survivor with dementia goes on a revenge mission to track down the man who murdered his family and that of his friend.
You are the only person who could still recognize the man who murdered our families. I have planned everything for you. You must follow these steps precisely. His name is Otto Wallisch. You must find him. You must kill him.
This stars Christopher Plummer and Martin Landau, both who are extremely old, and I didn't realize how old they were until I saw them in this movie. Now, Christopher Plummer recently won an Academy Award for Beginners, which was a big deal for him because I know he had tried to win one for Station Agent and that didn't happen. And Martin Landau has won an Academy Award, but that was like 20 some years ago for Ed Wood, which was a fantastic performance as Bela Lugosi. What is interesting about this movie is it's one of those films that becomes something very different than what you initially think the movie is. And the movie starts out as this guy, he wakes up, generally whenever he falls asleep, he has trouble figuring out who he is and what has happened recently in his life. It's a side effect of dementia when you're older. He's not quite like Alzheimer's laden because his mind is not completely gone. And trust me, I my grandfather had Alzheimer's, so I've seen this happen firsthand. And it starts out as him just trying to go through his daily life after his wife dies. And then he is brought in by his friend to his apartment. He's like, okay, you got to go do this. You got to go track down this guy who was in charge of our group in Auschwitz, and they were never able to pin anything on him. They had no proof. But this guy figured out he knew who it was, and he's like, you got to confront him. And there are four people across the United States and one in Canada that he has to confront. And each one, of course, is tense because he's there reportedly to kill one of them and take revenge for the death of their families. An incredibly well-acted piece, all mostly on Christopher Plummer's shoulders, and he does just a fantastic job. But it has some extremely tense moments. And one of the things that also reminds us of, more so than a lot, always every year there's Holocaust movies. I mean, this year they had Son of Saul that came out, and I think last year they had Labyrinth of Lies, which was a German film or an Austrian film. And so there's a lot of movies still made about the Holocaust, but what this really brings into perspective is we are approaching the time where all the people who lived through this are going to be gone. All the Auschwitz survivors are dying off simply from old age. And we're losing a bit of history, and we need to remember that because people think that nothing could get as bad as it was back during World War II, especially in Europe. But that was recent history. I mean, yeah, 70 years ago, but it was still recent history. I mean, we're not talking about Alexander the Great's time. We're talking about my father's time. It's an incredibly well-acted movie, and it's very powerful. It has some very intense scenes. And Christopher Plummer's great, and Martin Landau's great in it, but he's got a much smaller part. But Christopher Plummer has a really strong performance in this film. I'm going to have to say I thought it totally rocked.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the last film of the week, and that is One More Time. Christopher Walken plays an aging crooner who tries to revitalize his career with a new hip release, much to the chagrin of his daughter, struggling to become a professional singer herself.
This new single is going to be the beginning of my next thing.
Jude, come on up and sing.
You have a wonderful talent. Why don't you do something with it? With this
you'd be more successful if you just get out of your own way.
You sure you're not just trying to live vicariously through me?
If I wanted to live vicariously, it wouldn't be through you.
Christopher Walken is not a... He does not have a whole bunch of albums to his name, but when you watch this movie, you could believe he did. So it's kind of neat to see him take on that role. And Amber Heard plays a really good foil against him. It's really more her movie and her dealing with the fact that she has a famous and wealthy father, and she really hasn't wanted for anything for real in her life. But it's really more about her trying to get her life together and stop using him and whatever nonsense he's done in the past as an excuse. And what's funny is I saw this movie right after I saw Demolition. And I didn't, as you recall from a couple minutes ago, I was talking about Demolition, did not like that movie. This one feels kind of the same way, where it's just sort of getting into the nitty-gritty of personal relationships. But I liked the characters. Yeah, he's a womanizing jerk. And yeah, she's kind of a self-entitled, spoiled brat. But there's something appealing about them, and part of it's the acting, and part of it's just the performance, part of it's just what's on the page that they eventually bring to life. So I actually kind of enjoyed this movie because I thought it had a lot of real to it put against a situation that not all of us have ever faced. So I'm going to have to say One More Time, it's worth checking out. It kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office once again. More hatred out there for Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Oh, it had a 70% drop this weekend. It had an 82% Friday to Friday drop. People are saying, oh, look how terrible it is. The sky is falling. Look, first of all, Warner Brothers has publicly stated that they're not concerned with the drop of the second weekend. And I tend to believe them. You know why? Because it made, I predicted $65 million, it made $51 million, which is not much compared to the $160-some million it made the first weekend. But this was completely expected. It's a franchise picture. And if you look at other big franchise tentpoles like the Harry Potter movies, the later ones, and if you look at like the Twilight movies and a lot of other superhero movies, they take massive drops in the second weekend because they're very front loaded because they're a you got to see it this weekend kind of movie. And I think this is a situation where journalists are untrained and they're trying to drive the narrative rather than actually report the news. Because this is the second movie in a series. What was the second movie in the Marvel series? Incredible Hulk, which didn't even make $130 million domestically. Batman vs. Superman made more in its first 2 days than The Incredible Hulk did made in its entire run. And then if you look at the other movies, it was just the two Iron Man movies that were real great guns. Thor and Captain America were not huge hits. And, you know, for as much as everyone loved The Winter Soldier, which is a great movie, that was not a massive juggernaut hit. The Avengers was, but they had 5 movies leading up to it. You know how many movies were leading up to Batman vs. Superman? 1. Now, a lot of people have compared this to the drop-off that Fantastic Four had last summer. Well, that's BS. Not BVS, it's BS. Because the Fantastic Four had started out with like $25 million. Well, if 80% drop-off of $25 million, you don't recoup much cost at all, especially when the budget is over $100 million. It's not The Dark Knight, it's not The Avengers. But it's also not Man of Steel, Captain America, Thor, or The Incredible Hulk. All of which are considered big movies in the Marvel canon, or Ant-Man. It's made well more than Ant-Man. I think people in this industry just want to see it fail. Now, what's going to happen this weekend? I think Batman vs. Superman is going to win again this weekend with $25 million. Some people are predicting lower in the 20s, but $25 million seems to be a good, safe bet. That still amounts for a 55% drop or so weekend to weekend, which is, I think, what you're going to get. Harker Henry's not going to taken much more than $10 million, and The Boss is its biggest competition, but that's a smaller comedy. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Of course, the big movie this week that came out on Blu-ray and DVD was Star Wars The Force Awakens. I'm sure you've heard of this movie. I got the Blu-ray DVD combo set to review. It looks gorgeous like any other Disney high-scale release. It has a one-hour cinematic journey that covers all aspects of the film, and that's just really neat. It's a well-done documentary. Some documentaries they put on these things are terrible. This one's really well done from the sale of Lucasfilm to the production of the film. There's no commentary, which is kind of disappointing, but there's a bunch of behind-the-scenes featurettes that are between 3 and 10 minutes. They have one about the table read. They have one about the creatures, building BB-8, putting together the snow fight, and ILM doing the visual effects, John Williams doing the score. So there's a lot of stuff on this Blu-ray that are worth checking out. Other releases this week, you've got Doctor Who Season 9, which is the swan song for Clara. The Expanse Season 1, which I started watching, I can't tell you what it's about. It's nonsensical and insane, but it's a Sci-Fi Channel series. The Hollow, which is actually a pretty good thriller of a movie, worth checking out if you're a horror fan. You want to see something visceral, gritty, very earthy. And Journey to the Seventh Planet on Blu-ray, and if you know your astronomy, that is The Search for Uranus. That's it for this week. I need to leave, and when I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Jungle Book, Barbershop, The Next Cut, and Criminal, or... Can Gal Gadot act? Until then, have a fat time at the movies.